Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to Legacy of a Nation. I am your host, Sun 752, standing in for Brother Mac, who is a little bit under the weather, but we're gonna soldier on in his absence and make him proud. And this Saturday, this weekend, today, right now, on the Legacy of a Nation show, we are asking the question of, does the new administration devalue the black man? We're going to be talking a little bit about politics. And as we talk about politics, what we're really going to be talking about tonight is the state of affairs of the black man and woman as we celebrate and as we acknowledge our Aboriginal status. So does the new administration devalue the black man? Well, you know, in our recent, I would say a fairly recent history, we have had to deal with many situations where the black man is pit against the black woman, sort of like Battle of the Sexes, and the media loves to foster that narrative. I think it's a dangerous narrative for our people, because when you consider our condition, our present condition, our past condition, and the condition that we'll be in tomorrow if we don't change our outlook and perspective about each other and how much we need each other. The black man needs the black woman. Cut and dry, point blank, no way around it. And the black woman needs the black man, because the black family needs the black man and the black woman, and also the black father and the black mother. We've seen way too many negative examples of what happens when you don't have both, and when one suffers without the other, or has to live in perpetual absence of the other. Because, you know, we're supposed to love each other, we're supposed to be there for each other, we're supposed to help each other, we're supposed to protect each other. We are supposed to be there for each other to make sure that we are in the same corner for each other as we build the black family. And it's one of the reasons that the black family is in such disarray right now. We're under attack. And when you consider the situation that the black man is in, which is a situation with, and when I say the black man, I mean the black man, strictly talking about males, you know, as far as the justice system is concerned, we are perpetually targeted by the justice system. The economic system does not want to see us in leadership positions. And when we are in leadership positions, it seems as though there is always a conspiracy or a plan or a mission and a system put in place to make sure that we are somehow demoralized and neutralized. So that's something that we have to deal with when we're talking about the black man. Now, the black man hasn't done himself a lot of favors in our present condition. In other words, we haven't done many of the things that we need to do. The black man has failed to be there for their family in numbers large enough to make sure that his representation is undeniable and ubiquitous to the point where every child should always know where his father is. Every child should always be aware of the challenges that will be present when his father isn't there. And that's not to say anything bad about the black mother, or to say that the black mother is automatically there. I'm just taking one example right now, and trust me, I'll get to the rest of them as we go along. But yeah, so the black man is constantly under attack. You know, it seems like when we are successful in any area of life, but especially when we are visibly successful and we are financially successful at the same time, something seems to happen to us. Are some of the things our fault by putting ourselves at the wrong places at the wrong times on purpose? Yes, I agree with that. However, we can't deny that historically we have more than enough proof to satisfy the fact that we have been targeted and we continue to be targeted Well, we have to stop feeding into it. You know, like the old show Beretta was always talking about, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. Yeah, but that sounds easy enough. But when you're put in positions where crime may be your only means to an end until you can accumulate enough cash or resources to be able to thrive in the legal field. And so an example of that may be when we see people in our drug culture try to funnel some of their illegal money into legal ventures that may take longer to get off the ground. We know that in business, it's not easy to start off being lucrative in a legal business for a while. That's why many of us have to get bank loans, and we have to show collateral. We have to put up enough collateral to prove that we are worthy enough for securing a bank loan. And even our race comes into that situation because of institutionalized racism, we may be denied loans because of our race, with all types of excuses to justify them saying that we may not be able to pay them back. And it's all BS, because many black people are successful in business, but many people will tell you that black people don't know how to run businesses. Well, we have more than enough examples to prove that we know how to run businesses, but we also have enough proof to prove that when we start to become successful over our counterparts or opponents, a system seems to be put in place to neutralize us. Now, I'm wondering if that's what's going on in our political realm. Now, with the current administration, with the Trump administration, we know that there aren't any really important officers in the Trump administration that we can think of. And I'm going to Google some of the people who are some of the black people who are in the Trump administration to try to illustrate and contrast the difference between the Trump administration and past presidential administrations. And you can just tell me now with Joe Biden being the president elect and being triumphant and being elected over Donald Trump, I'm wondering if we're going to see the same pattern with different representation. Sure, Joe Biden may not be appointing a lot of black people, a lot of black men to his cabinet, but he may be appointing a lot of black women to his cabinet. And that may be a reason to celebrate for many. However, we also have to look at the impact that may have in our community, positive and negative. I do believe that our black women deserve to be celebrated. I do believe that our black women deserve to be put in positions of authority and positions of high esteem and respect to be successful. And I do believe that historically they have been overlooked. But you know how they say the devil is always working, baby. They say that the devil is always working, and when you take a strong look at the problems, the familial problems, the community problems, the societal problems that the black man and the black woman have had with trying to come together, be together, and try to unite. Black people as a whole have had really, really tough issues trying to unite with one another. So we don't need another situation which that will just put another stamp on it and maybe even exacerbate the situation. So this is what we're going to do. First of all, I want to welcome you all to the Legacy of a Nation show. I'm your host, Sun752, once again standing in for Brother Mac. We do this each and every Saturday evening from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Legacy of a Nation represents, advocates, and supports the Aboriginal, Native, and Indigenous community of North and South America. We were here first. We were here before the European ever came over here to so-called colonize these lands, before they came over here to rape and pillage and practice genocide on us. We were here before Africans were ever brought here on slave ships, which is not even an accurate history. It's actually a reverse middle passage, but we can get into that another time. But we were here before the so-called Native American. And that is in no way any disrespect to the so-called Native American. It's just that the Native American is us, and we are them. We are Native. We are Indigenous. We are Aboriginal, and we represent that to the fullest. Tonight on the Legacy of a Nation show, we are asking the question, does the new administration, does the new presidential administration devalue the black man? We know that the black woman is essential, have been put in very, very essential positions in this administration. But my question is, where are the black men? If you would like to comment on this topic, if you would like to get a little piece of the microphone, I invite you to call in. And the number to call is area code 319-527-6199. Once again, the number to call is area code 319-527-6199. All you have to do is press number one, and that will let us know that you would like to speak, and then we will call you out by the last four digits of your telephone number. 319-527-6199. Call in. Totally uncensored show. Say it how you mean it, how you feel it. We can deal it. And that's how it's going down. All right. So what I'm going to do at this time is I'm going to Google prominent figures in some past presidential administrations, and then we're going to talk about this present administration and see where we're going, and see if we can see any patterns in the past presidential administration, and see if we have anything going on now that should be any cause for alarm. And once again, the number to call is area code 319-527-6199. I see Brother Elohim is ready to come on the line. What I'm going to do, brother, is I'm going to go ahead and Google this topic, and then I'm going to be right with you. So just hold tight. All right, so let me go ahead without any further ado. All right, let me see. How many administrations should we go back? Let's go back to the Clinton administration. All right, so we go to Clinton. That'll be Clinton, Bush, Obama, Trump, and now Biden. So that's five. I think that's a pretty good starting point, because many people believe that Bill Clinton did a lot for black people until we actually started paying attention. So let's have a look. Okay. Black people appointed to the Clinton administration. What we got? Let's click on. Oh boy. Nah, that one ain't it. Let's see. Let's go to the next one. Let's see. All right. Okay. What I did find. Interesting. All right. We have a list of African American United States cabinet secretaries. So these are appointees to the cabinets of past administrations, and by the looks of things, we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, five, six. Wait a minute. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. It looks like we have seven presidents who had black people in their cabinet. And let's see here. Colin Powell was part of the Bush administration. Colin Powell, Secretary of State, and Condoleezza Rice, Secretary of State. So for both administrations, for both terms, Colin Powell was the Secretary of State in the first administration, and Condoleezza Rice, as we may well remember, was Secretary of State of the second administration. I'm trying to see if there was anybody else. Okay, George W. Bush. Alfonso Jackson, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. So that seems to be a popular... I see a pattern brewing right there. Okay, who else was George Bush? Rod Page for George Bush. So it looks like George Bush had one, two. Oh, Lewis Wade Sullivan for George. Oh, that was George H.W. Bush. Okay, wait a minute. So George Bush had one, two, three, four. It looks like he appointed four black people to the cabinet, and one was a woman. So that's three and one for George H.W. Bush. I'm sorry, George W. Bush, which when you really think about it, ain't that bad. That ain't that bad considering what people really thought about George W. Bush and his race relations. For him to have had four in the cabinet ain't all that bad when you consider that you had two secretaries of state, one for each administration. He may not have been that great of a president, but he did. He had some black appointees to take the any type of stigmatization of him being racist in that regard is concerned. Okay, who else we have? Lyndon B. Johnson. Robert C. Weaver, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. That seems to be a popular place for black people. Okay. Patricia Roberts Harris, Jimmy Carter administration. These are all Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Samuel Pierce, Ronald Reagan, Alfonso. All right. So, so that seems to be a place where we fit in. So just like, what's his name? I was just talking about him a minute ago. He's probably here. Anyway, we'll get to him. Bill Clinton administration. Okay, Bill Clinton had Mike Espy, Secretary of Agriculture, Ron Brown, Secretary of Commerce. We know what happened to Ron Brown. Okay, and these were the first times that black people were appointed in these positions. So Mike Espy, Secretary of Agriculture, Ron Brown, Secretary of Commerce, and Alexis Herman, Secretary of Labor. So, and Alexis was a woman. So what do we have for Bill Clinton? We got and Bill Clinton also. Ron E. Slater, Secretary of Transportation. Rodney E. Slater, Clinton. Jesse Brown, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and Togo D. West Jr., Secretary of Veterans Affairs. So Jesse Brown, Togo D. West. So Bill Clinton had one. Two, three, oh wait, Secretary of Energy, Hazel R. O'Leary, a black O'Leary. Oh, well, how about that? Bill Clinton seems to have the most black appointees. Let's see, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. And honestly, it's pretty diverse. Out of seven, we have four men and three women. So there's a bit of a balance there. Shoot, even Barack Obama, let's see, Barack Obama had one, two, three, four, five. Jay Johnson, Secretary of Homeland Security. John King Jr., Secretary of Education. Anthony Fox, Secretary of Transportation. Loretta Lynch, Attorney General, and Eric Holder, Attorney General. What about Susan Rice? What was Susan Rice? I know she was something. Ben Carson was who I was thinking of. Now, Ben Carson is the only black person in Donald Trump's cabinet, by the looks of things. He the only one. He's the token. Yes, Ben Carson seems to be the token. So we don't have a lot of black people appointed to the cabinet in the Trump administration. Not surprising to me, but it's funny how, you know, when you talk to a lot of Trump supporters, they don't highlight that fact. Oh, Brother Elohim had his hand up, but okay. All right, I see that you're going back. But if you still want to talk, you know what to do. Just press number one and we'll have you back on here. All right, so as we take a look at this list, we see that it looks like Bill Clinton had the most appointees in his administration, in his two administrations, with seven, which pretty much blows out the competition. You would think that Barack Obama would have had a little bit more than everyone else. It looks like he may come up third, because George W. Bush had one. Okay, wait. One, two. Three, to four. Okay, so Barack Obama with his five did better than George Bush. George Bush was looking pretty good until I realized that George H.W. Bush was the one who was kind of giving out the jobs. But wasn't Colin Powell? Oh no. I'm sorry. Colin Powell was Secretary of State in the George W. Bush administration. Okay, so we got it. So, okay, as we take a look at this, now we need to take a look at the incoming Biden administration and see the people who are going to be part of his cabinet. All right, so let's take a look at that now. Okay. Black people appointed to the Joe. Okay, wait. Black people appointed to the Biden administration. Okay, now when we take a look at Joe Biden's appointees, we already know that there's a lot. There's a lot. They have a graph on this website, which is brookings.edu, brookings.edu, and they show a graph, and they're talking about the racial and ethnic breakdown of appointees in the first 100 days, President Bush, Obama, and Trump. So you see on this graph, 71.90% white for those administrations, the Bush, Obama, and Trump administrations. Black, you have 10.50% And then it starts getting into Asian and all that, but we ain't getting into all of that. We talking about black man, woman, black man and black woman. So you have 10.5. So when you look at wait a minute, I'm looking for the Biden administration because okay. All right, wait a minute. Look, I just want the numbers. So let me see if I can find the actual numbers. Okay. I need somebody to just give me the numbers, son. Just give me the numbers. Just give me the numbers. So we're going to get it. We're going to get it. All right. So just give me the list of names. All right. Black leaders express concerns about representation by. All right. Okay. Okay. Now. Okay. It looks like. It looks like. Joe Biden is. All right. Let me see what we got here. Interesting. By the looks of what I'm taking a look at for the Joe Biden administration, there's a little bit of diversity here, but I don't know if these. Okay. I don't know in what prominent positions that. Okay. I don't know. This is a lot here. Kind of, you know, he's definitely opening it up because we here is of the number. It looks like 22 people, but I don't know if these people actually been appointed or they were being considered. Okay. So, but this, I'll bring them up for you. I'll give you the numbers, the names, and you'll see. Okay. Come on. I got, I mean, my, okay. As it stands now, it says Donald Trump had just one single black person on his cabinet for his entire first term, but Ben Carson, Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, has plenty to be desired in that position, to put it mildly, possibly placing pressure on Biden to not just replace him with a competent housing and urban development secretary, but also one who is black. In fact, considering Trump has been racist against black people while camouflaging that truth, nominally championing criminal justice reform and touting black unemployment numbers he inherited from President Obama. Oh, God, I ain't getting to all that. All right, we have Stacey Abrams. Now, let's say Stacey Abrams in Joe Biden's administration is a no-brainer. Many have, but what is she going to be doing? It doesn't say. But they have General Lloyd Austin, Department of Defense. I'm not sure exactly what that means. Secretary of, no, wait a minute. Okay. My browser is acting a little crazy. Representative Karen Bass Housing and Urban Development and HHS. What's HHS? Let me see. Housing and Urban Development. Chair Influencer. Congressional Black Caucus. I don't know. Oh, Health and Human Services. All right. Darrell Blocker, CIA Director. Let me see. Raphael Bostic, Treasury Department. Atlanta Mayor Lance Bottom, Housing and Urban Development. Carol Mosley, Braun, Department of Interior. Former Jacksonville Mayor Alvin Brown, her Housing and Urban. See, I'm thinking that these must have been people that would be, because everybody can't be, you know, there can only be one person in charge of Housing and Urban Development. So I don't think that we're getting the right. Okay. Here's who has been named so far. And this is as of December 20th, 2020. Let me switch back over here. All right. Brother Elohim is on. So before I get to the rest of this list, I'm going to bring Brother Elohim on so I can actually get a look at that list so we can get a more accurate description. All right, so without any further ado, if my cursor will act right on my PC, I'm going to bring in Brother Elohim. Wait a minute. Brother Elohim, welcome to the Legacy of a Nation show. Thank you for holding on. What's going on, my brother? How you feeling this evening? What's on your mind?
I'm feeling like a real man should. What can I tell you? I'm pretty good over here. I'm just a little concerned about my brother Matt. I haven't actually heard anything. So if you can give me an update on his condition, that would be great. I'm Brother Elohim from Elohim Speaks. We're on every Sunday from 8 to 9. The topic from this Sunday on will be the Bible. Code book or religious book, we'll be talking about the Bible most of the time. My calling number is 516-453-9230. That's from 7 to 8, okay? I'm not sure where we're going here, but I just wanted to give you the shout-out. And you can go ahead and finish what you're doing, and you can bring me back in when you get done, okay?
All right, I got you.
Okay. All right. Much love. I'll be right here.
Mind, I can tell you what we're doing. So this show is about the new presidential administration and whether the people appointed to this administration are overwhelmingly Black women. There's a high representation of Black women in this administration. And I'm wondering if this is a way of freezing out the Black man and actually finding a way to pit him up against the Black woman. It's sort of like in corporate business. You know, a lot of corporations don't want to see Black men in prominent positions of leadership in corporate America. They know what that type of representation and that type of imagery can do to energize our youth into believing that they can do it one day. So what many corporate execs have done is that they have put Black women in positions of leadership and power, meanwhile failing to give the Black men any jobs at all. So what I'm wondering is if this is another way of doing that. As you may know, Brother Elohim, the Trump administration was very popular with white men and with Black men who were Trump supporters. So out of the Black Trump supporters, he was overwhelmingly popular with Black men. They seemed to identify, I guess, with his politics, with just what he was. They wanted him to be more of a man's man. Brother Elohim, We're hearing a lot of static or some type of interference with your microphone. I don't know. It sounds like you have your phone in your pocket or something like that.
Are you still getting it?
Yeah. It's a little staticky. It's a little rough.
Okay. I'm not doing anything. I'm just I don't know why you're getting it from my end. It's coming from me, huh? Okay, I don't know where it's coming from. I'm here nice and quiet. Nobody here but me. Hold on for a second. Let me...
All right. Okay. So anyway, for those of you who are just coming on, yeah, that's what we were talking about. You know, like, we don't need another situation where the black man is put up against the black woman. That's what we don't need. We don't need a battle of the sexes situation. We can't afford it. Our community can't afford it. Our people can't afford it. Our family can't afford it. We just can't afford it. You know, we already had one common enemy that too many of us don't recognize. Too many of us don't understand. Too many of us don't seem to acknowledge. But we will be quick to acknowledge the enemy within ourselves. And as far as I'm concerned, the biggest enemy within our or among ourselves is our division, our inability to unite, our inability to come together, our inability to accept one another and decide to agree, to disagree, but to move on with each other, not without each other. I'm going to tell y'all something. I'm going to tell y'all, brothers and sisters, something. Anybody can separate. Separation ain't hard. It ain't hard. It's one of the easiest things that you can do. If black people don't know how to do anything, we know how to get away from each other. We know how to move away from each other. We know how to put each other out. We know how to insult each other. We know how to freeze each other out. We know how to defame each other. We know how to do all of that. And we do that in front of the other man all day long. But how many of us know how to come together? How many of us know how to be congratulatory towards each other in a way that isn't histrionic, isn't fake, isn't one of those things that's just for show, and in a way that doesn't ignore other pertinent issues that may be present? You know, a lot of times we support each other to a fault. Like, I don't care what he did, but, you know, all I know is that he bought my grandmother a brand new microwave back in 1987. Like, hold on, slow down, baby. Slow down. This man killed 4 people. I know, but I'm saying, what about my grandmother? You saying my grandmother didn't? So we don't want to get into all of that. We still have to make sure that we check each other. Checking each other is important because, listen, I don't know what y'all know about leadership, but for what I know about leadership, listen, when people start becoming popular and they start making a lot of money and having a lot of influence and being able to get everything in the world that they want, a lot of times. Almost all the time, you know. Then we have a separate problem. We have ego issues that come in and entitlement issues that come in, and we wind up having to go to court to try to advocate for our brothers and our sisters. And we don't want to get into that. It doesn't happen as much with our sisters, but it definitely happens with our brothers. And you know, we got to do better than that. So sometimes we have to make sure that we check for the good and the bad, but we have to make decisions to unite with each other and to separate the wheat from the chaff. We can train each other and insist from each other that we do better with each other. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Let's get our shit together. And there's no better time than the present. We should have been doing it many yesterdays ago, but that doesn't mean that we can't get it done right now. And I think that we have to. It's way too important. So let's take a look at the appointees that we were looking up before, and let's see what we have. Oh boy. Yeah. All right. So, all right, this has all of the black people that have been appointed so far. I mean, I'm sorry, all of the people, period. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take just name these. These are the people who have been named so far. Let me see what the official title. Biden administration, here's who has been named so far. President-elect Joe Biden is assembling his inner circle of advisors and cabinet officials as inauguration day on January 20th draws closer. All right. Okay. So here, the key White House staff. I'm not going to read none of the white people. I'm just going to read the black people. And it looks like, all right, we have Simone Sanders, chief spokesperson for the vice president. And I thought this was where Simone Sanders, for lack of a better description of her, she is the black woman that you see in the pictures with the short hair and the parts in her hair. So I think that she probably represents the LGBTQ. No surprise there, but some of these people don't have a picture on here, and I'm wondering why. I'm going to refresh the page and see if we can fix that issue. Okay, Susan Rice, Director of Domestic Policy Council. Who else? So I'm just seeing those two for that. Economic Policy, Cecilia Rouse. She looks kind of black, you know. She hasn't been confirmed yet. And we have Secretary of Defense, retired General Lloyd Austin, Secretary of Defense, okay. Linda Thomas Greenfield, Ambassador to the United Nations. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Marsha Fudge. Administrator of the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, Michael Reagan. Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, Adewale Wally Adeyemo. So he's obviously an African brother. Okay, and many of these people require confirmation. They haven't been confirmed yet. Chairperson Council on Environmental Quality, Brenda Mallory, and that's it. Now I know that there are more from what I've been seeing, unless what I've been seeing is a little different than what is really going on. But from the names that I just read off, it doesn't look like it looks a little balanced. But I know that the information that I received before and the pictures that I saw before, like there was a whole team of black women, and I wasn't seeing enough black male representation. And I think that we have to have both. If not total balance, because I don't think that balance is totally necessary, but we need to make sure that we have black people in key positions. What we don't want to see is any tokens, and I think that we've covered that. I think that they've done a pretty good job with that. We don't need any tokens, and we don't need a situation where our black man is going to be jealous of our black woman. And I think we need to have a little conversation about that, the black man being jealous of the black woman. We don't have any room for that, brothers and sisters. We just don't have any room for that. It's just not a good look for us. You know, we are in a position socially, economically, familially, community-wise, where we need to make sure that we are in support of each other. You know, I'll use this example. You know, you take the example of a runaway slave. You know, when our grandparents were in slavery, the ones of us, those of us who were in search and in need, in dire need of freedom, those of us who had some type of conception about what freedom was, tried to run away. And when you ask yourself, what could a runaway slave do? Where could they run? Where do you run away to? You know, as we see right now, even if you were successful as a slave and running away from the plantation, freeing yourself from master, what you didn't do or what you weren't able to do was free yourself from racism, free yourself from the systematic oppression that would probably sell you back into or return you back into slavery. And that's kind of the situation that we are in now. If any of us runs away to quote unquote freedom, but we don't take any of our brothers and our sisters with us, well, who are we going to be free in front of? How can you be free around all of your oppressors? And that's talking about back in the day with slavery and talking about it right now. How can you be free with all your oppressors around? So although I may not want to make money off of you as a slave, or in what was mostly the case, I wasn't able to afford to have you as a slave. Only rich white men own slaves. That's something that we have to understand, brothers and sisters. Only rich white men own slaves, not rich white women, not the regular 9-to-5 or blue collar white working man. No, they didn't own no slaves. The only men who owned slaves back in the day were rich white men. That's it. Slaves wasn't cheap. They wasn't cheap at all. And as you can imagine, the value that a slave had, way more than a horse, way more value than a cow. But I'm using the example of if a slave during slavery times is successful in running away up north, will he remain free around other people who will practice systemic racism on him or her? Like Harriet Tubman said, she would have freed a lot more slaves if the slaves had realized that they were slaves. They didn't believe that they were slaves. They thought that it was okay. It ain't bad here. We get, you know, 3 square meals. We off on Sunday. Master's a kind master. He's a nice master. He's a kind, nice master. They didn't even understand that their condition was that of livestock. They didn't even understand their oppressive condition, not because they were stupid, but because they were conditioned to think that they were, that's all that they were supposed to be. A slave was all that they were supposed to be. So the ones who rebelled against their condition and talked about running away were told on by those who were satisfied with their condition. I'm gonna go ahead and tell Master Tom that Jimbo is thinking about running away. They didn't understand. So as the slaves who wanted to get free tried to calm and bring confidence to the other slaves that, listen, we can do this. What we are willing to do to get away is worth dying for. It's worth it, especially if we unite well enough to be able to make it. So those who didn't believe in that would go ahead and tell on them and thwart the efforts of the rebellious slaves. And they would eventually be beaten and neutralized and maybe even sold down the river. And I don't know if y'all know that a slave that was sold from the upper South to the deep South and Mississippi and Louisiana, the average life expectancy of a slave once they got down there was 7 years. 7 years. It's like a cab that's on the street. A taxi cab that's on the street gets about 5 years after. That's a brand new vehicle that will be useless in 5 years because of the wear and tear on that engine. That is the measurement of the toiling and the toll that was taken on the Black American body, mind, and soul when they were sold down to the Deep South, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, down in the bayou, baby. Yeah, it was rough. That's why none of the slaves wanted to be sold down the river, and they didn't even know what states that they were in. I mean, you know, they didn't go to school. They knew it was down the river. They knew it was in the Deep South, and once you make it to the Deep South, they got word that you won't come back. So when you relate that to today's times, when you relate that to what we have going on in our present condition, if we have our Black man hating on our Black woman, being jealous, envious, and resentful towards our Black women, I don't like the way that you raise my kids. Well, why ain't you here helping me raise them then? Listen, man, you know, I advocate for the Black man, but I call a spade in a minute. I don't think that you can effectively criticize the job that the Black mother does with the Black children if you ain't there to contribute nothing. Especially when you're able-bodied enough to be able to have been there. So if you don't, let's take it back to something simple. Every man, every Black man has to deal with a woman that has a Black child. He got his son, and she wants his hair to grow long before he gets his first haircut. You know how Black women are with hair. Oh, he got that long, pretty hair. She's braiding his hair. You know, his boy ain't a boy 2-3 years old and got hair down his back and shit. Like, wait a minute. You know that boy ain't supposed to be looking like that. But if you ain't there to take the boy to the damn barber, if the mother has to be the one to take him to the barber shop, we got a problem, Houston. So, hey, you might have been in jail. You know, I hear a lot of brothers talk about that. Well, I was locked up during his younger years, so I couldn't be there. But, you know, I thought she was going to hold it down. I come home, and my boy at home, he playing with dolls, and you know, his hair, he's looking all crazy. Well, you know, Black man, all you got to do in order to take care of your son and make sure that he has the masculinity that you so badly want to see him have is to make sure that you are present. Make sure that he can call you. Make sure that you come through. Make sure that you take him and show him what you think is important. But some of these cats out here are so soft that even the ones that are there, they got to let it out now. Let's just say they're a little. Well, I'm just going to put it this way. I'll just call out a few objects. Charmin, Cottonelle, Kleenex, Puffs, water balloons, strawberry shortcake. I'm just saying. But, you know, I'm kidding around and I'm being serious at the same time. You know, you can't hate on the job that the Black woman is doing if you ain't stepping up as a Black man. Every man and woman in this world was born because of the mixing of the sperm and the egg of a man and a woman. So if you were conceived by a man and a woman, why the hell should you have to live the rest of your life without that mother and that father? Why? I'm sorry. I fail to see the logic in that. I ain't with all that. And I'm not going to make any excuses for it. But if our black women are successful in this world, it should trickle down to the black family. Now, that's not to say that the black woman should always perpetually be the head of the black family, but because of the absence of the black man for whatever reason, that's the way society is for us, and that's what we have become used to. Well, let's talk about it. Since we're talking about the new administration devaluing the black man, I think we probably have to take a look at the black man devaluing the black man, the black woman devaluing the black woman, the black woman devaluing the black man devaluing the black woman, the black man and woman devaluing each other and themselves. You know, we talk about, there's an urban myth that's been going around for a long time about the welfare system, what the welfare system has done to the black family, and how it has pushed the black man out of the black family. Yeah, because when the woman was on welfare, she chose the welfare check and the food stamps and the medical card over the black man. So you know when the social workers used to come out, they used to come out to the home, and if they saw any male clothing, any adult male clothing in the house, then the check would be cut off, because they figured if you had a black man there, that he was probably working and contributing to the household. So why should the state pay for you to feed your children, clothe and house your children when you have an able-bodied male there helping you out? Well, many people have accepted this theory. Well, welfare system did push the black man out of the house. You know, they tell the black man, the black woman would tell the black man, well, yeah, you got to get out of here because the social worker is coming and I can't have your stuff in here or you in here. Well, you going to mess up my check. That sound right to y'all? Does it sound right to y'all? Because I'm going to tell y'all what it sounds like to me. There may have been an instance or two where that was the case, but I hope it was an instance only where the man and the woman weren't really together. I'm hoping that those were situations where a man and a woman were just relieving each other physically. I hope it was just a sexual relationship, because I'm thinking that if a black man with two working arms, legs, feet, spine, body, and mind, if he's able to get up off his ass and go to work, why the fuck should his black woman be on welfare in the first place? Why should your children have to be fed by the state? I mean, on one end, you can argue that there was always poverty and despair in the black community. It's true. But on the other end, you have to take a look at some of the parables. In the 50s, 60s, and even 70s, there were jobs. If you lived in states like Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, there were jobs, factories, plants. People were there. We were able to, you know, to financially sustain ourselves in many instances. So if that was the case, then what kind of man is going to go to work every day and not feed his family with what he worked for? What kind of man? I'm lost on that one. So if a man doesn't love his family enough to stay in the home when the social worker comes and represent. When the social worker came, the black man should have been right there sitting on the couch like, listen, I'm here just to let you know that we don't need that check no more. We don't need that check. We good. I'm over here. That's my son. Those are my two sons. Those are my daughters. And I'm here and I'm taking care of them. So that little bit of money that y'all giving them that certifies that they are living in poverty, well, that's done. Daddy bringing home the bacon. Car, rent, or mortgage, food, clothing, and shelter. I got it. Plus, I'm going to make sure that they go to school every day and I'm going to check their homework. That's what a man is supposed to do. So I don't know what kind of welfare system or what kind of households that push the black man out of that to get that check. Listen, brothers and sisters, if y'all get nothing out of this conversation, I'm going to tell you like this. Welfare is ironclad proof that you're poor. Ironclad proof. You don't have to prove nothing else to confirm that you are poor than getting a welfare check. And that's why many brothers and sisters don't want to have no part of that shit. And I don't blame them, because I would be one of those brothers and sisters. Nah, I'm good. I'm good. I like food and I like food stamps, but I like buying food stamps off of somebody else. I don't want my name on that list. I'm good. And many brothers and sisters feel like me. But I'm not going to accept that we as brothers and sisters are okay to be pit against each other. I'm not okay with that. And if the system, whether it's the Trump administration or whether it's the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, or the upcoming Biden administration, if it wants to give our women jobs and not our men as many jobs, well, we need to make sure that we understand those jobs still will feed our families. And that imagery is something that is going to help at least half of our gender spectrum. So where the black man falls down, the black woman has to pick up. And where the black woman falls down, the man has to pick up. And a man should always be on that job. Always. Listen, I want to thank y'all for hearing me out this Saturday for this installment of the Legacy of a Nation show. I really enjoyed being here with you and having this talk. We will be back next Saturday, same bat time, same bat channel, and we will be rocking out, rocking on. Brother Mac is under the weather. I would like y'all to please pray for my dad. He's in need of it right now. He's fighting, and a warrior like him will always fight to the death. And I'm right by his side, making sure that I'm fighting for him and fighting with him. So if you know my dad, and you love my dad, you like my dad or whatever, or you just have good admiration for him, please send out your prayers for him. Like I said, he needs that. It's essential. We all need it, but he's in dire need of it. And we're going to do it like that. So with that being said, on behalf of Brother Mac, Son 752, and Legacy of a Nation worldwide, internationally, and universally, we're going to leave you with peace tonight. And peace is something that we mean. We mean it all the way. So I'm going to holler at y'all. I'll holler at my go-getters tomorrow for the Urban Therapy with Sun show. And every day, you know, I very rarely plug the Daily Go-Getter Business show or the Urban Therapy with Sun show on this show, but I think I'm going to do it now. We will be on tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. for the for the Urban Therapy with Sun show. So make sure y'all come through and rock out with us. So I holler at y'all later. Y'all have a good night. Be peaceful. Be careful. We are still in this pandemic and it's real. Real. You know what I'm saying? So I'ma holler back. And so peace out. You know what I'm saying? Oh. All right, let's get out of here. You know, I'm gonna stop using this Chrome browser, man. It's over for that. This thing is crazy. Hold on, hold on, hold on.
How many people do you know?